You're listening to a fantastic podcast of spurious morality. Hello and welcome to a podcast of Spurious Morality. I'm Johnston and with me this week I have Connor.
Hello.
And I have Mansour.
Hello.
And we are continuing our journey through the second series of Ninth Doctor Adventures from Big Finish. So we've covered just over half a series actually. We got up to the Seas of Titan last time. We're not doing everything. We're sort of picking our favourites, but we seem to have found a lot of favourites in this series, which is a good thing. So we're going to dive straight in. Let's go for it. The next episode that we need to talk about is Lay Down Your Arms, which is the second episode from Hidden Depths, the third set in the series. And I think, Mansour, you wanted to talk about this one, so go ahead.
Yeah, I don't have loads to say about it, but there's just like one little aspect of it that I liked, which was something we touched on last time, and it's just that bit of doing that kind of like prequel-ish work of setting up the reasons for the Doctor's pacifism that we see in the 2005 series. So that series ends, and it's a really big deal how he's, you know, not going to blow up the Daleks again at the end. And then you have stories like this audio where you have those themes of war and pacifism coming in. So as a story, it was pretty decent, not the best ever, but that was the little bit that I liked, that it was actually sort of fitting in this new era that Big Finish have created, that it made sense there.
Yeah, it kind of it is one that plays very nicely into the Ninth Doctor's character and sort of those themes, and it kind of puts him in a situation where he is sort of forced to make a choice and that kind of thing. It's a clever episode. It doesn't do anything sort of gigantic or ridiculous or amazing, but it's a nice solid episode that kind of really thematically fits into the Ninth Doctor in that first series. And there's one sort of thing that we see some of, I'm not sure we see enough of really in these Ninth Doctor adventures, and that is character work for the Doctor. We only got one series out of him. He's the shortest lived Doctor. And I think that there is actually an opportunity for Big Finish to kind of build on him a little bit here, perhaps more than there would be for any other Doctor. And it's episodes like this that sort of start to play with that, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a good one to start on. I like it. However, I think the next episode is sort of one of the highlights of this series. I think it's one of the highlights of the Ninth Doctor adventures, and I think it's a wonderful thing that Big Finish have done, kind of turning Tanya and Liv into these recurring characters that meet multiple Doctors. We've had Tanya meet the 12th Doctor as well in an audio novel, but it's Flatpak. So this was kind of, I guess it was the big hook of the whole set, really. It was the Ninth Doctor meets Liv and Tanya. And it doesn't disappoint. It's exactly what I want from sort of a post-stranded Liv and Tanya, sort of seeing where they're up to. They're just living normal life. They're going to somewhere that's definitely not IKEA honest on a weekend and that kind of thing. It's great. It works. It's a fairly simple story. It's not tied into any storyline. It doesn't try to do anything epic. It doesn't sort of challenge the relationship between any characters or anything like that. It's just really nice to have this Doctor meeting these characters. There's a really sort of nice poignant moment where obviously Liv knows about regeneration. She met the Seventh Doctor before she travelled with the Eighth Doctor. But there's a really great scene where they kind of talk about how the Doctor's regenerated again. And the Doctor's, you know, he brushes it off. Oh, yeah, you know, regeneration happens all the time. I'm the same man, though. And Liv's like, no, you've just told me that my friend's died. And I think it's absolutely great. I think it's a really, really well done, well-played moment. It is by John Dorney. I think that John Dorney gets Liv better than any other writer. I think a lot of other writers have done some great stuff with Liv, but I think Liv has very much been Dorney's baby, and it's great that he gets to kind of further explore her and explore her time after the Doctor and explore her relationship with a different Doctor here. So I'm a big fan of Flatpak. Do you want to talk about it, Connor?
Yes, so you said that this wasn't a disappointment, and I'm unfortunately have to disagree with you. Not because it's not a great episode of Doctor Who, it is a great episode of Doctor Who, but this is just this is entirely aside from the actual episode itself, which I will talk about in a moment. But we had, I don't know if you guys remember this or not, but we have a friend who sent us a little bit of a teaser for this shortly before it was announced. And it was a picture of Christopher Eccleston and it was a picture of Nicola Walker. Because they were in the know that it was coming out, you know, on the day of announcement, and they sent us this little hint. Never said what it was, didn't say it was Doctor Who, whatever, and we were like, oh, cool, great, the Ninth Doctor's going to meet Levchenka. And I was sitting in the corner going, what if it's Christopher Eccleston playing Macbeth and Nicola Walker playing Lady Macbeth? And then it was announced as the Ninth Doctor and Levchenka and Tanya, and I was just like, cool. But we've been robbed. We've been robbed of...
Hang on. You're disappointed because it's not Shakespeare. Like, that's a high standard.
I just thought that would have been fire. Eccleston playing Macbeth and Nicola Walker playing Lady Macbeth. Big finish, please. That's waiting to happen. Anyway, the episode itself. Yes.
It would be fantastic, wouldn't it?
It would be really fantastic. I really enjoy it. So it's not, I had actually forgotten until you said about Tanya meeting the 12th Doctor in that audio novel. They haven't done anything else with Liv and Tanya post-Stranded yet, have they? There's nothing I can think of.
It's a Torchwood waiting to happen, though.
It really is. It is a Torchwood waiting to happen. I want to hear Levchenka post-Watershed without, you know, Doctor Who's ban on swearing. That's what I want to hear. So, yes, it's a great story. I like John Dorney went through a wee bit of a phase. He did it here, and he did it in Splinters with the 10th Doctor as well, where he gets the Doctor to play the villain. And Eccleston's good. He sort of poshes it up. And genuinely, I could not tell it was him until just before the reveal hit, I think, the first time around. I did not twig that the villain was the Ninth Doctor, or a version of the Ninth Doctor, and it was Chris Eccleston playing him. So that's pretty decent, and it's just fantastic. Hey, it's just fantastic to hear Liv and Tanya again post, you know, TARDIS travels. So it's a joy to listen to, and I'm glad that we've got this. I just wish we were getting more of those two after their TARDIS adventures. So I do. But yes, it's good to hear that. I always like hearing the Ninth Doctor coming up against, you know, his old companions. And I think Liv, in the same way the Brigadier sort of very gently tells him, you know, you need a companion, go and find somebody to travel with again. Liv, sort of in her very no-nonsense way towards the end, is like, you know, stop messing about, go and find somebody to travel with. Don't be moping around on your own. So that's a pretty good parallel to draw. So I quite like that. And it's a solid episode. It's barely disguised Doctor Who does evil IKEA, but I think everyone has visited an IKEA at some stage or other, and it's a very decent setting for a Doctor Who story. So I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, it's a sort of setup that you're kind of surprised that the TV series hasn't done previously.
It's a very Russell T. Davis sort of thing to do as well, isn't it? Kind of
let's have a very 2005 thing to do, you know, when you've got Rose Tyler working in a shop.
Like everyday objects coming to life and becoming threatening. It feels like it would fit right in.
And the TARDIS, let's face it, would not look out of place in an IKEA. I think they make that point a couple of times in the story itself, but the TARDIS would not look out of place in an IKEA.
I'm fairly sure that I've seen something Doctor Who-y in my local IKEA. Like they have put a TARDIS in somewhere or something like that. I can't remember exactly now. This is years ago, but
I think it sometimes turns up in like the books or DVDs in the fake bedrooms.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was it. It was kind of, so yeah, they're not averse to it. But it sort of reminds me a little bit of like Bad Wolf, you know, where all of a sudden it's the weakest link and Big Brother and that kind of thing. In the same vein, I can see the Ninth Doctor going to IKEA, and that's precisely what this does, except it's not IKEA, honest.
Yes, it's the IKEA with the serial numbers filed off.
Yeah, that's the one. What about you, Mansour? What do you think about this one?
Not much to add other than that. Like with the stuff about pacifism war, that we do have that set up again, pointing towards the 2005 series about needing a companion. Just really solid. It's just like the story in isolation is good, and it's just kind of elevated, I think, by having those characters return and meet the Ninth Doctor. So, one of the highlights, or the highlight of this box set, I would say.
Yeah, I think this was the big one they went for when sort of promoting the set. It was very much in this set, the Ninth Doctor meets Liv. I know that, like, you know, the Sea Devils were talked about as well, but it did kind of feel like the Sea Devils were second fiddle to Livchenka and Tanya. It's a strong story. I have to admit, I do kind of feel like when I listen to this set, I'm waiting to get to this episode. It's the one that we're kind of all here for, which probably does the other two episodes a bit of a disservice, but it's good. You know, it's a Dorney, it's got characters we love in it. It's very well done, and it's a great, very Doctor Who-y concept. So yeah, cannot complain. Shall we move on then to the final set? It doesn't contain a two-parter. We've not got the two-part finale that the first series had, but we do kind of have a link between The Colour of Terror and Red Darkness. They kind of sort of indirectly link, I guess. There's a link
It is a two-parter. It's just sort of separated by another episode.
It's sort of that RTD pre-finale. In the same way that Monsters in Metropolis is like a pre-finale to the Cyberman two-parter in the first series of the Ninth Doctor Adventures. It's set up for the finale.
Yes, I think that's fair. So first story in the set then is The Colour of Terror, which is, like you say, the pre-finale or part one, or whatever you want to call it. I like this one. I think this is a lot of fun. It's basically bitchy shop owners attacked by colour-based aliens, which is such a Doctor Who concept. Like, that's only happening in Doctor Who. That's not happening elsewhere. The big sort of point of this one for me, I guess, is the characters. Like, we have some good character work here. We have some sort of very likable characters. We've got a great guest actor. We've got Frank Skinner. I always like Frank Skinner turning up in Doctor Who. I think it's an absolute crime that his character from Mummy on the Orient Express hasn't come back in some way, shape or form. But we do get Frank Skinner here, and Frank Skinner's done some other good stuff in with Big Finish as well. He's in, is it the Sinestro and Kill he's in?
Yes.
He is, isn't he? He's, yes. So yeah, like he's somebody that doesn't turn up particularly often in a Big Finish, but whenever he does, it's, yeah, I'm going to like this character, I'm, you know. It's not sort of the busiest story ever. It's, like I say, it's a fairly sort of simple concept. People are disappearing. There's sort of bitchiness between shops. There's a lot of characters that disagree with each other. We've got a particularly unlikable character in Mrs. Bevel. And it all just kind of comes together and the villain gets defeated. The villain is basically the colour red. And yeah, it's a nice little story. I'm a big fan of it. Anything that either of you want to add?
I think it's not a story I'm so keen on, I have to admit. I think the saving grace is Frank Skinner, who, as you say, is always an absolute delight. I think there's slightly too much going on for the... It feels quite cramped, you know, that like... I always picture quite a cramped, cluttered shop, and I don't know, but it sort of imprints itself on my enjoyment of the episode or how I experienced the episode. It feels very cramped. There's just one or too many characters bouncing about it, but Frank Skinner is the saving grace. He's always a joy to hear or to see in Doctor Who. On the subject of his character from Mori on the Orient Express, I would love if he was maybe to turn up in the 13th Doctor Adventures and maybe actually get a chance to travel in the TARDIS, because I know Frank Skinner was gutted when he watched the behind the scenes of Mummy. It's the bit where he gives off about them making him turn down the chance to travel in the TARDIS. Like, they have him on the set and he said all he wanted to do was say, yes, 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 take me with you. But his character has to turn it down, so he has to turn it down. So maybe that will be a fun place to bring Perkins back in.
And we'll talk about Red Darkness in a bit, but I think this works really well alongside that, just in terms of they are very closely linked, but have a very different feel and tone. It's kind of, I guess, like we're talking about comparisons with TV before, maybe like The Long Game and then Bad Wolf Parting of the Ways. But yeah, that, you know, that setup episode feels like the stakes are at a different level. The sort of humor and focus on character is different. But yeah, I liked it for just, and again, I could see it fitting into, like a lot of these audios, actually, the Ninth Doctor ones, you can see them fitting into TV really well in terms of, that's what post-2005 and pre-2005 Doctor Who has often done, is focus on a very small set of characters and get to know them and then get to experience the threat or the problem or the escalation through their eyes. So yeah, I enjoyed this and works as a nice counterpart to the final episode at the end of the box set.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of kind of the format of this set, which does have that sort of, I mean, we'll talk about the Blooming Menace in a minute, but it does have that kind of, that gap in the middle where we go off and have another sort of arguably colour-based story as well. Colour's obviously the big theme of the set here. But yeah, it's nice to kind of just have one episode separating it, so it doesn't... I have to admit, if this story had have been in an earlier set, you know, if this had have come before Flatpak and we'd have had Lay Down Your Arms or whatever here, when it came to the big reveal in Red Darkness, I'd probably have gone, who, what, you know, it's been 3 months since the last set. I don't really remember them. But because it's kind of on that in that same set, and I mean, I think I listened to the whole set in one go, so I had an hour separating them out. I think that worked quite well, and it's kind of a good way of A, handling a new villain, and sort of B, linking them to an existing villain, a fairly iconic one at that. So yeah, I like what this does. It doesn't feel like it's setting something up. It feels like an episode in its own right, but it's sort of very strongly called back to later on in the set. I like that. So the next episode on our list, the next episode in the set, is The Blooming Menace. I'm a big fan of this one. It's silly. It's a silly let's take the mick out of gentlemen's clubs type episode, and Big Finish has a few of these, and they're all rather quite good. It's sort of a niche little let's take the mick out of upper class twits subgenre that Big Finish actually does quite well. So yeah, it's all, you know, we've got the Fellows Club, they're all bachelors, they're all chums, yeah, yeah, yeah. And basically, they're being haunted by aliens. It's nice and simple. You know, they're all wanting to get married and that kind of thing, and that's not the sort of thing they do in this gentleman's club. It's a bit of a romp, it's a bit silly. It lets Eccleston kind of edge on the sort of daft side of his doctor, which again, with the Ninth Doctor's TV era being so short, we don't really get to see much of. So it's nice that we get it here. We've got, you know, some good characters here as well. We've got your classic woman pretending to be a man and nobody except the doctor notices. It's all a bit farcical. It's all a bit fun. It just lightens things up a little bit before a fairly dark finale, like, you know, some dark decisions made in that finale. And this is just a nice bit of silly. So James Kettle's story, I like James Kettle. He does this sort of thing very, very well. So yeah, it's another very, very strong episode as far as I'm concerned. Anything that you guys would like to add?
This didn't sort of leave as much of an impression on me as it did on you. I'm just thinking, but it might be because I was listening to a lot of these in a row when before we recorded. But like hearing you talk there, it's making me think that it's a concept that maybe might have could have worked as like a half hour episode rather than a 45-minute, 50-minute episode. Because as you say, it is quite light. The concepts are fun, but there's nothing super in depth in terms of like sort of serious drama or psychological stuff to get into. And I've really liked some of the Big Finish stuff that's played around with half hour episodes, like the Iris Wildtime stories, the recent Bernice releases that have gone to having a couple of half hour episodes on each disc. And I know they're kind of committed to, you know, replicating the TV series episode length with these audios, but yeah, it'd be nice to maybe just mix it up a bit and just have like a couple of shorter stories on a disc for Christopher Eccleston sometimes as well, but yeah, I don't have much more to say on this one.
I think it's interesting actually that you do kind of mention the most recent Bernice Summerfield stuff, because again, it's that whole private members club slight farce comedy. I get that it's not sort of the direct link, as it were. Yeah,
the same with Iris. Like her whole vibe is a bit lighter and more chaotic, and you could see this being an Iris Wildtime story very much so. And her stuff really, really suits the half hour format that they moved to, I think.
Yeah, I wonder if they would ever sort of start playing with the format of these. You know, I think it's fair to say that probably what we're going to get with the Ninth Doctor from Big Finish will always be hour-long episodes. But
the classic Doctors have moved away a little bit from sort of aping TV because of the box sets, though. So they play around with episode length a little bit more. But like I said this a lot of times before, I wish Big Finish wouldn't be so like just determined by the format of the TV area that they're covering. Like, sometimes a story might not have any natural episode breaks, so just tell it as like one long story, and other times it might do, so yeah, break it up. But instead, I think we kind of fall into this default of like the standard Doctor Who story is 4 half-hour episodes, and everything sort of deviates from that. But yeah, anyway, so it's a little side rant on formats and episode lengths.
I think one of my favourite things that has come out of the Big Finish box set era is it has happened a couple of times with the Third Doctor stories, and it's happened with the Fifth Doctor adventures, and once or twice with the Sixth. I don't think it's happened with the Seventh yet, but we're getting 6-part serials. And it sort of makes me think a little bit of Quatermass, because when you look at the Quatermass stories, they're 6 half-hour, you know, episodes as one serial, but they're just these self-contained standalone stories. They're not part of a bigger whole in the same way that Doctor Who often feels. I think Doctor Who serials feel more disposable in the, you know, than the likes of the Quatermass stories do, but. Or they can do, you know, they don't feel like it's just a solid self-contained story for the sake of telling a good story. It's a, okay, we're moving on. What's this now? Like, I think you can get a little bit production line sometimes. Or at least that's my impression of some stories. But with the Third Doctor, like, we got stuff like the Quintessence, and they've sort of moved to the 6 or 7 part self-contained stories. And I think they're actually stronger for it. The Fifth Doctor adventures have done it with the likes of The Great Beyond, and even Hooked Light. You know, it's told over 2 book sets, it's double the length, but it's just a self-contained, really decent story being told over this serial format. So I think I almost prefer that type of set. Torchwood Soho does it as well. That's a great example, because it's deliberately riffing on Quatermass. But I think that's... I almost enjoy those box sets more than the likes of, you know, getting a 4-parter and a 2-parter or 2 3-parters, stuff like that. I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah, the Torchwood one is another one of those. Yeah, that's worth mentioning, where they do that. Yeah, a series of linked half-hour stories rather than a series of half-hour episodes of one story. So, yeah, a slight distinction between the two.
Like I say, sadly, I think the Ninth Doctor is always going to be stuck in this hour-long format. So yeah, I'm all for more playing with the format, and I would kind of like to see, you know, the Ninth Doctor. And, you know, we're now moving into this sort of series-based era, and I've sort of said, well, the monthly release series-based era. And I've sort of said it slightly reminds me of the monthly range. Maybe not, though. Maybe it's a little bit more in the vein of how the Eighth Doctor adventures were, the Lucy Miller stuff, and how the first, was it 5 or 6, Fourth Doctor series were. And we got some really sort of strong story stuff in there, and we did have, you know, 2-parters thrown in here and there, and we did have... So maybe there is room, maybe this era that we're moving into now, or the release pattern we're moving into now, maybe it does allow for some more storyline-based format, play-with-y type stuff. We'll see. We'll see what happens moving forward. But in the meantime, we'll move forward to the series finale. So as we've said, kind of, we had the Colour of Terror. It kind of existed. It was pretty self-contained. It felt like it was all done with at the end. But it kind of bleeds into Red Darkness here, where we kind of have like super Vashta Narada that have teamed up, merged, are working with, have symbioted with, whatever you want to say, the Vermine. I think it's Vermine. I think I've got that right, from The Colour of Terror. So we've kind of got like Red Vashta Narada who are going around and being a bit rotten. They're doing very Vashta Narada-y things, like eating people to the point where they're just a pile of bones. This does a lot. You know, it starts off as sort of a fairly generic, albeit dark story, but it kind of gives us, it gives us the closest thing, I guess, this range gives us to a, like an ongoing companion, or companions, I should say. You know, we get Callan and Doyle, who sort of by, they don't choose to join the Doctor, they just kind of have to join the Doctor at the end of the story. It's getting the TARDIS or the Vashta Narada are going to get you. So that's kind of how we do it. Callan's mum is killed, if I remember correctly, which is sort of very dark. The way it's done is very dark. All in all, it's a very grim episode. It's a very, very grim story. The link back to Colour of Terror works really, really well. And the Vashta Narada are a great villain for it. And Vashta Narada, I think, are one of those villains that Big Finish do quite well. Weeping Angels, too. Like, they work well on audio because they're not overly visual villains. You know, the whole point of the Weeping Angels is you can't see them moving. And the Vashta Narada are made up of literal darkness. So they kind of have a bit of an edge on audio. They work well. So, yeah, I like this one. I did kind of wonder where the idea of us picking up companions now was going to go. It turns out we're dumping them in the first episode of the next series, although there's a lot of off-screen, as it were, adventures in the meantime. I like that. At least we've got that. It's a shame that that wasn't explored a bit further, but we know Eccleston's always said he doesn't want a companion that's not Rose at Big Finish. So this is kind of as close as we get. So it was just something that kind of left us hanging for the next series as well, I suppose. So yeah, plenty to talk about with this one, I think. Do you want to go ahead, Connor?
Yeah, it's I always feel a little bit strange about one episode finales, because I think it's sort of been conditioned into me from the 2005-2010 era that for a finale you sort of need a two-parter just for the impact of, you know, having a big season finale. So this is decent. I as you say, with when it comes to the Vashta Narada and the Weeping Angels, even the Silence, sort of the more visual new series villains, Big Finish always do really well. They've worked out how to make those sorts of villains really effective on audio. It's a decent story. I always like sort of colonist survival stories. You know, people go to alien planet turns out a bit dangerous, people have to survive. It's a good format for Doctor Who. And Callan and Doyle are pretty great. I think they're two really likeable characters. There's a sort of uniqueness to them as well. You get that sort of sci-fi twist on a guide dog, basically, with Doyle. And he's a really cool wee character. So I think they're both really likeable. And when it comes to that finale, obviously we're sitting as listeners going, oh, Eccleston doesn't want a companion, it's never going to happen. When Callan and Doyle go with him in the TARDIS at the end, and, you know, it is sort of implied that they're going to have more adventures, it's a great ending for the series because it's unexpected, and it's a big twist on what we've had so far with the Ninth Doctor Adventures, where it's very episode of the week. You've got companions of the week, and this is a good twist on the format. I will qualify that somewhat whenever we come to talk about the Green Gift, because I do have thoughts on how quickly they leave the TARDIS again. But as far as Red Darkness goes, it's a great ending to the series to have the Doctor take two companions and go off for the first time in this series with a recurring companion. So yeah, that's it. I like the Vashta Narada sort of infect the TARDIS, getting into it through the lamp. I like that. I like that they're so aggressive, because they do feel more aggressive than the regular Vashta Narada, and they feel properly dangerous, so that's pretty good as well. All in all, it's very decent. I don't think it's as strong a finale as the Fourth Generation was for you know, Series 1 of the Ninth Doctor Adventures. But it's good. It's still a good story, and it does freshen up the format a little bit of the Ninth Doctor range.
Yeah, I think you've got a good point there. It's really not as strong as the finale from the last series, but I think the finale from the last series very deliberately sort of A, set itself up to be a gap between the classic series and the new series, and did that classic sort of 2005 two-part finale thing. Fair play to them for not sort of sticking to that format here, for doing something a bit different. I really like this episode. I think it's a very good episode, and I do sort of wonder, do I prefer the first finale because of my personal tastes, or is it just sort of generally better? Because I do know people that sort of swear by this as being better than the first one.
I think for series one, it's a very conventional finale. Like, it does hit a lot of the big new series beats. You get the Brigadier back, there's a big returning element. You get the Cybermen back, big tentpole classic villain. And it sort of ties in with Monsters in Metropolis in the same way. Parting of the Ways ties in with Dalek from 2005. So Red Darkness doesn't really do many of those things by comparison. I think whereas series one sort of feels like it's building up to that finale, and then it does all the conventional finale things. We just seem to arrive at Red Darkness. We arrive at this story, and that's it. We just seem to come to a dead halt. There's no build up to it. Other than The Color of Terror, which is sort of like a retro, it's sort of retrospectively a build up episode that it didn't seem like at the time. I don't know. It doesn't do the conventional finale things, and a finale doesn't have to do those things, but it feels like just another episode in the run. It doesn't feel like a full stop on the end of the series. It just feels like we come to a stop at the end of this one.
So, but personally, I don't think that's too much of an issue, because like we were talking before about how, you know, in an ideal world, you're a bit freer to not just copy the episode length of an era. I'd say the same with the shape of a series. Yeah, that finale in the audio series one definitely has that Russell T Davies finale feel to it. And that was nice to sort of do a version of that. But I feel like it would be diminishing returns if they tried to do that in each of the three. Is it three audio series so far that we've had?
Yes.
Yeah, three. I feel like we've done that. We've sort of done a version of the TV finale, and I was happy with this just being a sort of decent, tense episode. And like I said before as well, like a nice counterpoint to The Color Red as well. The thing about taking companions, I'm a bit conflicted about this, because if you were to just not be bothered by continuity and just think about what would be good for some interesting audios, I completely agree that I would like to just see the Ninth Doctor with a companion, because it would just save that kind of rerunning the introduction every single episode, because we have that thing of him having to pop up and kind of do a version of that scene in Rose in each of these audios. But also it does kind of then break the TV series even further if he is happily traveling with a companion, because the whole point of Rose is that, like, this is the implication at least is this is the first person he's let in enough for him to move on from like all the trauma that he's gone through. I'm a bit conflicted about whether I would actually want him to travel with anyone long term, but it would have some like practical storytelling benefits for these audios in isolation.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a moot point now because it's been sold. You know, if we were going into the fourth series and it was looking to be more of the same, I'd be kind of like, yeah, it's it's companion time, and you know what, I'll just take the mind wipe at the end or something so we can carry on with Rose as normal. But it is kind of a moot point here, but it's, I get the impression it was obviously something Big Finish wanted to do. Like, it's something Big Finish were trying to push, and I think this is perhaps as far as Eccleston would let them push. He's like, fine, he can pop up for a couple of episodes. We'll talk about all of the adventures we've had in the middle, which Big Finish have done many, many times before. Kind of the trilogy format kind of necessitated it with some characters. And yeah, I'm glad we got this. I'm glad we did get these characters. And, you know, I hope we meet them again. They leave in Green Gift in a way that would enable us to revisit them and that kind of thing. And maybe, you know, that's something we could do. It's probably not very high on the list of priorities because, again, Billy Piper, it's far more exciting. But, yeah, you know, it's something that could happen at some point, maybe.
Do you think it has to be the Ninth Doctor? Because I think we talked about this last episode, that once we've got very soon we're going to have an ongoing monthly range of the Ninth Doctor and the 13th Doctor jumping back and forth. I think it would be great to have some like cross-pollination between those, in the way that like the New Adventures and the Missing Adventures did with the novels. So you have a story in the Ninth Doctor and Rose audios, and then there's like a character or an element or just like a little subtle connection with one of the 13th Doctor audios that comes out the following month. I know scheduling and production makes that like a nightmare to do logistically, but that would be really nice if they could arrange that sort of thing.
It would be nice to have some kind of, I don't know, I guess the model to look at would be maybe Blood Harvest and Goth Opera, something like that, where,
yeah, exactly, yeah,
two stories that link but are relatively unrelated, you know.
You can understand them on their own.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's not a sequel, prequel, whatever. It's just things link them. That's what I'd like to see, I suppose. So that wraps up the series. That is the second series of Ninth Doctor Adventures. And I know I said this last time we did one of these, but I found myself really, really enjoying this, having convinced myself that it, not that it was bad, but that it wasn't anything special, that it wasn't. And I think that at this point, the Ninth Doctor Adventures had fallen into sort of a nice, safe pattern. I think we were getting exactly what we expected to get, and also that sort of it became a staple of the series that things from elsewhere in Doctor Who were creeping in. You know, we'd had Sontarans, we'd had Sea Devils, Vashti Narada, Liv. And that would continue into the next series, quite a lot more, actually, which is obviously something we're going to do. We're going to carry on. We're going to do Series 3 as well. But, you know, this is different to the first series. I don't know if I prefer the first series to this or not now. If you'd have asked me before we started doing this, I'd have said hands down first series was probably my favourite. But I think I just love that finale, that Cyberman finale, so much that maybe that kind of clouds my judgment a bit in regards to the rest of it. So do you guys want to kind of add any final thoughts about this series before we sign off?
It has definitely improved on subsequent listens for me. I do still think Series 1 is the stronger of the Ninth Doctor Adventures series at Big Finish. And I think part of that is Series 1, you feel there's a novelty to having Eccleston back, and it's, oh my God, the thing we all thought was never going to happen is happening, and we're listening to new Ninth Doctor stories. But the time to come to do Series 2, the novelty, I don't think the novelty will ever fully wear off for me for having Christopher Eccleston back as Doctor Who, but it does feel like it's dulled slightly, and they're relying a little bit more on the classic elements, which I don't mind. I really don't mind. It's good to have the Sontarans in there. It's good to have Liv and Tanya in there, and it's good to have even the Vashti Narada as a wee bit of a call forward. But I don't think the overall quality of the episodes is just as high. I think they were maybe struggling slightly with the format for the series without a companion. And I think on balance, I do prefer series one. I think there's just an energy and excitement to it that isn't quite as noticeable in series two overall for me.
I think that one thing that all three of these series suffer from, but I think it's perhaps most noticeable here for reasons I'll mention in a moment, is it must be fairly difficult to, as a writer, you're approaching this series, you've got the Ninth Doctor, brilliant, we all know and love the Ninth Doctor, but there was never a televised Ninth Doctor story without Rose. We always saw him through Rose. We met him from Rose's perspective. Rose is just so key to this character. In fact, Rose is probably more important to the Ninth Doctor than any other companion to any other Doctor, because we just so closely associate them. They never had an episode without. Even the Fifth Doctor had 8 episodes without Tegan. So you've got to write in a companion of the week character, and it can't be Rose. So who does the Ninth Doctor hang out with when he's not hanging out with Rose? And I do think we get some really, really not great characters that are, you know, they're the companion. And when it's done right, you know, I'm looking at Auld Lang Syne, I'm looking at Station to Station, I'm looking at this. Yeah, it's brilliant. We actually get some really, really good pseudo companion of the week type characters, but I think it's just an obstacle that writers for this range had to overcome, and I think that in some cases it was to the detriment of this. Now, it kind of becomes less of a problem in series three because we meet Benny for an episode, we meet Riversong for an entire set, so it's kind of, you know, there's less of an impact there. Flatpak in this, you know, meeting Liv and Tanya, it feels like putting on a comfortable pair of shoes that we're familiar with. It just works. But basically, every single writer to this range was asked to essentially create a companion for every episode. And I'm not convinced it works. I think that might be the sort of main problem here. And I think it became more noticeable in this series than it was in the first, because we had that novelty of Eccleston's back, or it is in the third, because we have quite a lot of returning companion characters in there.
Yeah, it makes me wonder what, rather than just chopping and changing every episode, what a three-part Ninth Doctor story might look like. Yeah, and I'd agree that series one was definitely had that freshness element to it. Like, it sounds really kind of ungrateful and sort of unbelievable to say, but I actually got behind with my listening when series two was first coming out, and like when it was announced that Christopher Eccleston was coming to do Big Finish, I would never have imagined that. But I think it's exactly what you're describing, that like none of these episodes and stories are particularly bad. It's just that there is that challenge and awkwardness of trying to cram this number of stories into this pre-Rose era that I think becomes increasingly difficult. So I'm really looking forward to the new audios and just having the two of them together.
I guess that kind of leads me to one last question, which is, it's probably a bit of a logistical nightmare getting Christopher Eccleston and Billy Piper to record together. Let's assume they're recording together. Maybe they're recording separately, Fourth Doctor Adventure style. I don't know. But assuming it is difficult to get them both in the same room or whatever, and, you know, the Ninth Doctor Adventures were to continue, would you be happy to see another series in this format, the sort of pre-Rose companion of the week type thing? Or could we maybe have the Ninth Doctor drop Rose off for a little bit, pick up another companion, spend a bit of time with them, and then pick Rose up again and go off to meet Jack and Empty Child, for example? Sort of how would you like them to approach further roseless Ninth Doctor adventures.
I think if go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, is the question, like, if they had to do them? Because my first answer would be, like, I feel like they've gotten all the mileage they can out of that setup. But, I mean, if they had
Let's say Billy Piper's busy off in Cardiff filming series after series after series of TV Doctor Who.
I think what you said just now about, like maybe a sort of midnight setup where it's like a Rose Light episode, or she's like missing her mum and is dropped off back home for a little while, and because then especially if it's set late in series one, you could say that like he's been with Rose so much that it has had that effect of getting him like 90% healed already. And it would make sense for him to be making other friends and building other relationships. So, yeah, I'd say Rose Light approach and set it as late in series one as you can.
I would struggle now, I think. Well, I'm saying this before we've heard, you know, Snare or any of the other new Ninth Doctor and Rose stories, but I think now that we've got Billy Piper in this range, I would struggle to go back to a version of the series without Rose. The reason being, I think I mentioned this in the last episode we did on the Ninth Doctor, but the trailer for Snare, you get so much more of an impression of 2005. Just there's something in Eccleston's performance that I can picture his 2005 self much more easily than I can in these stories. And I can picture him easily enough in these, but there's an authenticness about hearing the two of them together that if we were to go back to the Ninth Doctor on his own, either pre-Rose or in a Rose Light version, that I think I would struggle with. It's worth pointing out as well, all the behind the scenes pictures so far have been of Eccleston and Billy Piper together in the same room, so I do think they have recorded together. And the beauty of this release schedule, by alternating it with the Ninth Doctor and 13th Doctor month by month, is that we don't actually, if they say they are going to do more, which they may not, there's a 2-year gap in which to schedule Eccleston and Piper, providing they're now allowed to use Piper, obviously. I don't think that was a consideration when this started, but obviously will be now. I think they've got 2 years in which to schedule Eccleston and Piper again, and I don't think that'll be as difficult as it maybe would have been once, now that it's happened. So I'm delighted that we're finally getting the two of them together, and I do think I would struggle to go back to a version of the Ninth Doctor Adventures without Billy Piper and without Rose, now that we've got the genuine article.
I suppose that's it. We're saying 12 episodes, but actually what it is 6 episodes a year, and that's scheduling and continuing into the future must have been a consideration when they kind of threw that together. Like, we're talking about busy actors here, not just Eccleston and Piper, but Jodie Whittaker as well. She's in everything at the moment. These are busy actors, so if 6 days a year, which is essentially what it would be, is what they can manage, then yeah, let's go with that. I will take these two doctors over nothing. Well, I think that's all we've got time for. It's been good, though. I've enjoyed going through this series. Like I say, I've not completely reassessed it, but I've found a lot more to enjoy than I did first time round. I do think perhaps this is a series that stands up to re-listen, or maybe it's best listened to as a series, you know, instead of 3 episodes every few months, maybe one big binge is the way to do it, because it does feel like I'm listening to a full series in 2005 or whatever, and I like that. And it's an excellent nostalgia kick. But we'll leave it there. So I will say thank you and goodbye to Connor.
Thank you very much. It's been fantastic.
Hey. And I will say thank you and goodbye to Manso.
Thank you.
And we'll be back for more Spodcasting very soon. Goodbye now.